This is the Old Mole Variety Hour. I'm Clayton Morgridge. Well, at the beginning of today's show, I quoted from Bertolt Brecht's 1935 article arguing that the seeds of fascism lie in capitalism itself, that only the elimination of capitalism can eliminate the threat of fascism. Turning to our own times, we can see how the neoliberal policies of the corporate state, in their unholy union of corporate and state power, have paved the way to the election of Donald Trump. What were these policies, or what are these policies? Neoliberalism favors privatization, fiscal austerity, deregulation, free trade, and reductions in government spending in order to increase the role of the private sector in the economy and society. As the private sector, dominated by massive concentrations of wealth in the hands of a tiny elite, increases its political power, the will of the people at large counts for less and less, and our interests are more and more subordinated to the interests of the elite. The result is stagnant or declining wages, less control over our working lives, the degradation of social services, a decaying infrastructure, environmental crisis, and a general demoralization. The only political movement that seemed to promise a new direction and to acknowledge what many people were feeling was the alt-right and the Trump campaign. But what exactly is it that gives the economic elite the power to control government and to ride roughshod over the needs of the people who elect them? One common answer is the role of money in politics, the massive amounts of money it takes to run for office, money mostly supplied by wealthy donors. But there is a more fundamental reason, and that is the power of the capital strike. If labor can bring production to a halt by going on strike, refusing to work, capital can go on strike by refusing to invest. To quote from a recent article on the Jacobin magazine website, capitalists routinely exert leverage over governments by withholding the resources, jobs, credit, goods, and services upon which society depends. The capital strike might take the form of layoffs, offshoring jobs and money, denying loans, or just a credible threat to do those things, along with a promise to relent once government delivers the desired policy changes. This same article, written by Kevin Young, Tarun Banerjee, and Michael Schwartz, goes on to illustrate how the capital strike operated during the Obama administration. Despite strong voter support for progressive changes, Obama's administration did little to challenge corporate power, inequality, militarism, and the growing climate catastrophe. Even the most timid efforts at reform were either defeated or watered down to appease entrenched interests. For example, Obama was elected with a clear mandate for strong financial reform, yet his administration did not prosecute even one person responsible for the crisis and took only weak measures to prevent the next one. Commentators often cite campaign donations, lobbying, Republican obstructionism, or Obama's own conservative inclinations to explain this record. But private control over investment is the root of the problem. The bank's decision to sustain disinvestment after the 2008 crash gave them the power to shape any legislation that sought to rein them in. During Obama's first year in office, the United States experienced the most damaging episode of disinvestment since World War II. Non-financial businesses were sitting on $2 trillion in capital, while banks kept another trillion. Companies were holding cash at rates not seen in half a century. A Bloomberg report found that companies that are spending have largely chosen to increase dividends and buy back stock rather than hire more workers, increase wages, or invest. This was not simply an automatic market response to low demand. Obama himself recognized that businesses were making a discretionary choice. His February 2011 speech at the Chamber of Commerce offered tax breaks and other government support for exports and innovation in return for domestic investment. Three initiatives to repair relations with corporate America represented Obama's side of the bargain. First, he renewed the Bush tax cuts on the wealthy and lowered corporate tax rates. Second, he continued his predecessor's deregulatory agenda, contrary to his campaign promises. And finally, he enhanced export opportunities and investment privileges through new trade agreements with South Korea, Colombia, and Panama, and later pursued the Trans-Pacific Partnership and Transatlantic Trade and Investment Partnership. These policies did little to address unemployment and lower consumer demand, and they were not meant to do so. They were instead a response to unrelated corporate demands. End of that quote. In short, the social wealth of the world we all depend upon in order to produce what we need to live is privately owned by and managed in the interests of the wealthiest individuals and families. And this enables them to rule over us by insisting that if they don't get their way, they will not let us use this wealth to maintain our lives. Wealth which, after all, was extracted in the first place from our labor. The Jacobin article concludes that electing new politicians will not disrupt businesses' fundamental control over state policy. Only by targeting the substance of corporate power rather than its shadow, the government, can major progressive change be achieved and sustained. What is that substance? It is the private ownership of social wealth, that is, capital. Or, as the Jacobin writers say, ultimately, the capital strike teaches us that reform is not enough. Power over investment brings power over the political process. Eliminating the capital strike, therefore, requires the radical democratization of economic ownership and control in society, an end to private capital and illegitimate power in all its forms. That day is still a long way off, but building grassroots movements that focus our analysis, energy, and anger on the substance of the problem can contribute to that goal in a way that focusing on the shadow of elected government cannot. I've been drawing on When Capitalists Go on Strike by Kevin Young, Tarun Banerjee, and Michael Schwartz, and we'll link to it on the webpage for today's show. I'm Clayton Morgridge for the Old Mole Variety Hour.